Well, Europe's tourism sector is champing at the bit to reopen by June and cheering at this announcement. Most EU countries saying they simply can't survive without with another lost summer. At the beginning of this year, tourist arrivals into Europe plummeted 85%. Alessandra Priante is the director for Europe at the UN World Tourism Organization. Alessandra, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you, Fran.
You just heard Professor Martin McKee there saying there needs to be caution around this plan, that countries are still recording thousands of new cases. Yesterday, France recorded 3,700, Italy around 9,000. And there's pockets of the virus in different places. Just because you're from a country that has low community transmission doesn't mean you're from an area with low community transmission. Is opening up for tourism a responsible thing to do right now?
It's a very tough question, my dear. I would say absolutely yes, it is, for one main reason, because the answer to the fact that the infection is still there and the virus is still there is definitely not to stop every possible economic activity, including tourism. There are some countries, especially in the south of Europe, that are highly dependent on tourism. Millions of jobs are at stake, two digits of GDPs generated by the tourism sector. I think that everything can be done if it's done responsibly and if it's done taking all the measures into account. So in other words, everyone is observing the rules and the health authorities are really doing their best to try to keep everything under control. Now, there's one thing for us. At UNWTO, we've been saying this from the very beginning when the pandemic was basically declared in March last year. There needs to be coordination between governments. What is really not healthy for anybody, mainly from an economic perspective, is the fact that the countries open up and then they close and then they have, they're okay, and then all of a sudden they impose 14 days quarantine, a month quarantine. They're asking their citizens to return immediately after they were told that they could go on vacation. So coordination, and in this sense, we really welcome the EU Digital Green Pass in this direction. Coordination is key. Now, as the previous speaker was mentioning, I mean, we're talking about digital solutions here. This is what these passes are. It's not like an identification code which is meant at discriminating. Vice versa. It's just a way to basically store all the documentation that in any case you need to show if you want to travel in one application.
Just to interrupt you there, Alessandra, because Martin also said that, yes, the green pass that we're talking about, which shows your proof of vaccination, your proof of testing, is in most cases a digital solution, but not all countries are demanding that. He's got a certificate to show his vaccination. Should only a digital solution be accepted?
No, let me just clarify one thing just to, you know, I don't, the digital solution that is provided, for example, with the EU Digital Green Pass for the way that it's been described, because obviously it didn't come into force yet, is very, very simple. It stores everything. So, for example, I have antibodies. I can say I have antibodies and have the result of my, basically of my PCR. So it doesn't mandatorily have to be a vaccination or I have a special medical condition, it can all be stored there. It's information. It's like, let me ask you, Fran, when you go to a new, let's say you want to travel somewhere, most likely you're going to have your digital boarding pass. So you're going to scan your QR code. Mm. That's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, my point is in terms of, you know, people are concerned about fraud, for instance, forgeries. My point is, would it only be acceptable if it's digital, therefore harder to forge, and some people like to have a paper boarding pass, to use your analogy, for instance. Would that be acceptable?
No, absolutely. Fraud can happen in both ways. It can happen on paper, and it can happen on a digital pass. A digital solution is actually a little bit better, and I would say maybe much better, because I give you a very, very small example, my dear. I just flew 3 days ago from Spain to Italy. I have done my PCR. I went to the I had a luggage, so I went to the desk, to the check-in desk, and I showed the guy. It wasn't even a printed one. It was like a PDF on my phone. And he just enlarged it to make sure it said negative, and he checked the date. Yeah. Now, I could have counterfeited that one.
You could have. That's right.
Right? So there's really not that much of a possibility. Vice versa, what the pass is supposed to be is supposed to be connected directly to your lab. So at that point, the authenticity of the certificate should be testified by the lab that issued the certificate. So it's a little bit more safe.
Just, Alessandra, just briefly, we're almost out of time, but would you expect that the opening up of European borders would be an invitation for internal EU travel, or would you expect to see, and would you hope to see, many people coming from countries like Australia or Singapore or Thailand or New Zealand or wherever?
Well, obviously, for us, tourism or domestic tourism, European tourism is not enough tourism. Tourism is free, like international mobility. So absolutely, I am expecting, if, of course, the restrictions allow, especially not just, you know, not just outgoing, but incoming as well from the US, from Australia, I'm definitely expecting people, for example, to go to Italy.
Okay.
People are saying that people are booking already, you know, so that means it's positive.
There's no doubt people are keen. Alessandra Priante, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Alessandra Priante is the Director for Europe at the UN World Tourism Organization.